So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 28. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Mace Windu. As always, I am Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hello everyone!
If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast, leave a comment on our Facebook page, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on Hypeable.com. So welcome back, Danya, to another week.
Yes, Wednesdays are now very, very exciting days for me, even more so than when we just record Resistance Radio, so... Do you know why?
Why? Why, Danya?
Because the Great British Bake Off is back.
I have to wait till it comes out on Netflix, so don't spoil it for me. I don't have TV.
Yeah, but doesn't it take, like, forever to go on Netflix because PBS have to release it first as the Great British Baking Show and put it on TV, which usually happens a year after it comes out for us, and then it gets put on Netflix, right?
I don't know how often it gets put on Netflix. Sometimes things show up fairly quick. But you know what? Maybe I saw it on Hulu. I have Hulu and Netflix. I don't know. I have to look at for it, see what's up there. But I'm into the baking. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, I love it as well. I really, really love it.
So, all right. So this is like we always get off topic before we even get started. So I'll tell you this.
It's fine.
It's fine. So the Great British Bake, you know, the show. I can't tell anyone what it's called. I just love it.
Great British Bake Off.
The Great British Bake Off. They're so polite. Like they help each other. They're so polite. Whereas, like, if you watch, like, you know, Hell's Kitchen or anything that, like, is the American version of it, they're like cutthroat. Yeah. I kid you not. Like they're like. They're, like, waiting for someone to, like, spill and drop something. And they're just like, oh, it happened. And here it's like, oh, no, don't worry. We can help you remake it real quick. And, like, everyone pitches in so that person has something to present. It's so
basically,
nice.
And when things go wrong, you get really stressed out and feel, like, really awkward. Because then you're like, oh, no, everything's going wrong. It's one of those shows where you just want everyone to succeed and everyone to win. Because that's just... how it goes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love it so much. And that's sometimes good. I'm pretty sure that there have been like geeky bakes on there before, so
I'm sure.
Can't remember
has.
If there's been a Star Wars bake. There might have been a Star Wars bake. I'll have to look it up.
I don't know if there's been a Star Wars bake. I know I specifically remember like a chessboard bake and some interesting things. Like one did a Harry Potter theme one. I remember that. So I don't know if they did a Star Wars one. They might have. It'd be kind of cool to talk about that at some point. But let's move on to the news, because we have some, not a lot of news this week. We got some cool stuff, though. So we have the Thrawn trilogy is being re-released with brand new covers, and they've revealed the covers, what they look like, and I will tell you, I think they're really awesome. Compared to the original covers, they really do feature Grand Admiral Thrawn in them. The first two books, Heir to the Empire and Dark Forces Rising, when you put them side by side, it actually makes Thrawn's full face. So I think that's kind of cool. What do you think of these covers here?
I'm not as convinced about them. I think the split on the front cover of the book of Thrawn's face is a little awkward. I really do like the Last Command cover, where he's kind of got his back to it, but I don't understand why they've got him on the covers twice. Like, you've got him on Last Command, and this is one big image. So if you look where, like, the ships line up between Dark Force Rising and Last Command, they do all still line up. And the picture carries across. So this means it's all one continuous image. So don't understand why we've got Thrawn on there twice, but no characters like Mara Jade, who is also introduced in this trilogy, and it just doesn't make sense to me.
Or, well, and then if you compare it to the original one, like, look at the first Heir to the Empire book. You have, like, Jorah Seaborth, you know, with his hands raised in the air, and Thrawn is itty-bitty in the bottom left-hand corner. So, like, they did remove other characters, because, you know, Mara Jade is prominently featured in the Last Command cover from the original artwork. So it's one of those things where they definitely changed it to kind of pander to, I think, the audience or what, you know, maybe to people who haven't read the Thrawn trilogy. Like, oh, this is the Thrawn trilogy. It's Thrawn trilogy. He's on every single cover. And if you put them together, he's there twice. But I like him. I think the artwork is pretty. I like the artwork. I think it's pretty cool. But I will say, I you know, the artwork for, like, I don't know. Maybe it's nostalgia. The artwork to Heir to the Empire and Dark Forces Rising and Last Command have been with me for so long that I'm kind of like, oh, they. And when I went to look at the original ones first, and I was like, oh, I kind of miss the old artwork. Like, it's so, like, do you remember, like, when Heir to the Empire came out, like, the words Star Wars were actually in, like a puffed up, like, the cover actually was raised up, on, like, on the softback. And the letters were that. Star Wars were, like, actually, like, a fancy, you know, kind of golden flaked kind of, you know, I guess, ink. It was like a sparkly ink. It was great.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. Maybe it's nostalgia. Probably is nostalgia, but... I don't know. I like the new ones. I think the artwork's pretty cool. Yeah. The words Star Wars in red and the titles. It's definitely a more modern design.
Yeah. It is. And it's very in keeping with that kind of trend right now, where if you've got a trilogy, you kind of do the artwork across all of the books. And then when you put them together, it makes one big image. So you have to buy all of them in the set. Etc. So it is very in keeping with what is on trend right now for book covers. Yeah. But I'm not gonna lie, I'm gonna miss the laser fingers from the Heir to the Empire book.
I will say the laser fingers was always entertaining.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just remember reading these books as a little kid, paperback, and you know, I remember volume one of a 3-book cycle. I'm like, oh man, this is so exciting. Like, the old covers tell you what order they are. I'm sure, like, we don't see the spine in these pictures, but I'm sure that it says, like, 1, 2, and 3, so you know which order they're coming in. But
yeah,
I don't know. I do like the cover artwork. I think it's really well done. I do like Han, Luke, and Leia. It's a little bit more animated, whereas, like, the ones from the original ones were definitely, like, pictures of the characters. Like, these are a little bit more stylized, but keeps, you know, the reminiscent of Harrison, Mark, and Carrie. Whereas the other ones were essentially, like, pictures that were airbrushed.
Yeah, so. I still want Mara Jade on the covers, though. Because, regardless, this is still Legends. It doesn't matter if it's got a new cover or not. This is still technically Legends, and we're getting the new Thrawn book, which will become new canon. So Mara Jade still exists in these books. Like, they're not going to get away from that. And she does play a pretty significant part in the trilogy. So I'm just a little bit mad that she's not on the cover, because she's, like, queen of my heart. Star Wars queen of my heart.
Mara Jade, Star Wars queen of Danya's heart.
Yeah, I love her so much.
All right. Well, moving on, let's go ahead and talk about the new Jyn Erso toys that are going to be available on Force Friday.
Yes!
I know, it's an EW exclusive, so there's some really cool pictures of all the different toys that are available. Donnie, why don't you tell us what you think of this first?
I want the Jyn Erso Funko Pop so bad. Guys, it is so cool looking. I'm not always that person that needs to have, like, every Funko ever, but this one is seriously cool. I'm not a big collector, but every now and again, a Funko Pop will come around, and I'll be like, I need that one. This is one of them. This is
I'll agree completely. You heard when I was flipping through these pictures, I was like, oh man, that Funko is really cool.
Yeah.
Definitely the Funko for Jyn Erso is pretty awesome. I'm pretty impressed with it. For the other toys, I'll be honest, I'm a little disappointed in some of them. Just the detail, like the face on a lot of them, stands out as kind of being something a little lackluster, but it could also be the pictures. So,
I mean, let's be real. How many of the Poe Dameron figures actually looked like Poe Dameron? Well,
that's my point. The Poe Dameron ones were pretty bad, too.
They were awful. They were some of the worst ones out of all of them. And maybe it's just because Oscar Isaac's beautiful face cannot be replicated in plastic form. Like, I'd buy that Would you buy that?
Yeah, why not? We'll take it.
He's a beautiful man, Mikey.
Who doesn't like him? But I will say, one of the other ones I was excited about was the pack, the Rogue One pack that has Jyn, Cassian, Andor, K2SO, Death Trooper, Darth Vader, Baze. It's got all of them. So I'm pretty, that one looks pretty cool. Like, I can definitely see picking that up and putting it on a shelf somewhere. I like these Jyn Erso toys.
Yeah,
I also like the Lego one, too. Those are cool.
Yeah. The other one that I really liked out of this set is obviously the Black Series collectible. But then we've come to expect that the Black Series collectibles are...
For the most part, will be pretty good.
Yeah, for the most part, will be pretty good. But the Jyn one is... I like the Jyn one quite a lot.
The Jyn one's better than the Muscle Leia, Slave Leia one. God.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. Well, beyond just the Jyn Erso toys that came out, we also got a sneak peek of the Rogue One 3.75-inch Wave 1 carded toys, the ones that are in the packaging. It was interesting. I was telling, Donnie this when we first saw it, is we have these pictures from, like, K2SO. When you click on, look at the front cover, it says, it's K2SO, the cover, it's definitely Rogue One packaging. You see the Death Trooper in the top right. And then when you look at the back of it, it has all the Rogue One details about the character, which is pretty cool. But there's also Rebels toys that have come out in this wave. There's a Sabine and a Kanan Jarrus one. And even though on the back it says, Star Wars Rebels, the front is the same exact packaging as the Rogue One stuff. Well, yeah. I thought that was kind of cool.
It is, and I don't know if it's because they're part of, like, the same wave, so therefore they're trying to link them together in the wave with the front packaging and then differentiating them on the back, or if it's more indicative of the fact that Rebels and Rogue One are happening very, very close together in the timeline, so therefore we're going to start seeing a lot more connectivity between the two properties. I mean, we spoke a lot about the Lucasfilm story group last week and how they kind of keep track of all of that stuff. So it would make sense either way, honestly. Yeah.
The only thing that makes me think that it might be something to tie because of maybe the timeline, of everything, is because I remember back when Episode 1 was released, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith. I collected a lot of the toys back then, just because Mom was able to pay for some of them. But I was able to, buy all those toys. And I remember when those toys, when those were released, not only did they release those toys, but they also released the classics, like the original trilogy ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they had different packaging for them. So, they had the packaging for all the ones that have been released for, Phantom Menace. So they had the Darth Maul on the cover. But then you had the classic ones that had, the green and the Vader. And it was different packaging, even though they were released at the same time. So there were different waves for the carded images. So I don't know if these are just part of the same group or if it's because of the timeline. Because, like I said, they are different timelines for Phantom Menace and obviously A New Hope. So it would be interesting, but I do like these characters, and I love the back. I love the artwork that's on the back for these characters. K2SO just totally made me go, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's really cool. But I'm super, 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 super in love with this Sabine figure. Mm-hmm. So much. I want one of those. And again, I'm not massively, one of these people that is I have to have all of these, and I must have them, and I collect, religiously. I live in shared accommodation, which means that I have very limited space in which to keep stuff. So I have to be very, very selective in what I buy and keep around. But that Sabine figure is gorgeous. It's also not her season 3 hair, because we know her hair is changing. So it'll be interesting to see if they'll do another release.
And what's interesting? As I'm flipping through all these, there's actually a Kylo Ren, too, with the same packaging. So maybe it's not the time. Maybe it's just the wave. So maybe it's just the
one. Yeah, which is what, I was saying. Like, maybe it's just the wave that's why the packaging has that image on there, that they're kind of just connecting it all together that way. Yeah,
I'll take that. It makes sense. Consistent branding. That way it's all on the shelf, has the same type of
logo. Yeah.
They did that with Force Awakens too.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on, Natalie Portman was on the Jimmy Kimmel Show, and she explained why her son has yet to see Star Wars yet. And you know what? I actually agree with her. I think there is a couple other people other actors who've talked about similar reasons why they haven't shown their younger kids movies they've been in because of this reason. Did you get a chance to watch the video or read the article on Hapable?
I have not watched the video. I did read the article, though. So.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense. It's one of those things where, her son is 5 years old, and she realized, in these films, by the time he gets to the third one, his mother dies.
Yeah.
And that's traumatic, maybe when he gets a little bit older, it's not going to be a problem, to be able to separate his mom from the character, but he's going to know. It's like, Mom, that was you. So she's like, yeah. And then, seeing your mom crying and dying at the end of Revenge of the Sith might be a little traumatic, Because, you're literally watching, your mother passing away, even though she's not your mother, it's the character. So, I vaguely remember someone Schwarzenegger or someone else doing similar things, oh, no, my kids have never seen, Terminator 2 because I die in that movie. Just something like that. So I don't know. I know other celebrities do this too. So it makes sense. But she does want to show them the original trilogy, which makes sense because they're they get the fun surprise of Darth Vader being Luke's father and all that fun stuff. So
I always, whenever anyone is coming into Star Wars as a new fan, I never tell them to watch Star Wars chronologically. It messes everything up. That reveal, if they have managed to somehow escape the huge pop culture thing the huge pop culture reveal that Darth Vader is Luke's father. If they've managed to avoid that through their entire life, which some people have, amazingly, they have no idea, but if they've managed to do that, why on earth would you show them Star Wars from Episode 1 through that way? It makes no sense. It takes all of the surprise. It diminishes that reveal you do it that way. So I am a huge proponent of either the Machete Order or
Release Order.
Release Order.
I'm a fan of Machete Order or Release Order, just because Release Order, going into the prequels, having seen 4 through 6, you now have the same knowledge that every other fan was going into the prequels with. So you get to experience the same way, which I think is good. But the Machete Order is actually really fun because it's really well thought out. And for those of you who don't know, it's Episode 4 and 5, so you get introduced to Star Wars the way everyone else was, old Ben talking about the Force and everything, and then you get the reveal, and then you go back to the prequels, Episode 1, 2, and 3, which is essentially like a flashback of Anakin's story, because now you know who Vader was, and you see his fall, and then you see his redemption in Return of the Jedi, and I really like that, because it does make it as a cohesive story, it tells everything together, without ruining any of the surprises. So I like that order, but chronological order too, whether you show 6 first or last, it's just the only reason I would say maybe hold off and show 6 before the prequels is because I will tell you this, after watching, Revenge of the Sith, Attack of the Clones, and even Phantom Menace, the action sequences in that is significantly better than the Vader Luke lightsaber battle that you get, which was a big lightsaber battle in Return of the Jedi. But it's kind of a letdown in comparison if you've never experienced it, because I've had someone tell me that before. But story wise, I think it makes more sense.
Story wise, it makes a lot more sense to do it that way. And a lot of the time, that's what we're here for. I mean, we're not here for all style over substance. You know, we want that story. And for me, the Machete Order is, like, the best way of experiencing the story of Star Wars. But, yeah, I can understand the criticism of, like, the action sequences maybe not being as good once you've gone back and watched the prequels. But the other thing is that all of the Jedi in the prequels are, like, insanely well-trained. So, you know, they've been through years and years and years of training. The Masters are, like, at the point where they've had decades of training. You know, whereas when you get to Return of the Jedi, like, whilst Luke has been trained, even to a certain extent, by Yoda, it's not really a lot of, like, battle training or actual physical use of the lightsaber. Therefore, he's not as trained as, like, the Jedi were back at their peak. And
I agree.
And Vader, also, at the point where he is in Return of the Jedi, is, you know, older. He is a lot more damaged by, like, the events of the prequel trilogy. So, you know, I wouldn't expect him to be as able-bodied and able to perform as many incredible feats in the way that he's fighting as he would have been able to in the prequel trilogy. So, even at that point, you know, that scrappy kind of tentative jumping around thing and kind of trying to figure things out and strategically thinking about how to get the upper hand rather than using this amazingly polished skill makes a lot more sense, you know, even story-wise, for Return of the Jedi. So, you know, I'd have an argument for, like, if someone said, yeah, but the fights in, like, Return of the Jedi aren't as good as, like, the prequel trilogy. What's up with that? Well,
I get it, but, like, I don't know. I'm just thinking back, like, as we talk about the order of watching the films in, I remember when Attack of the Clones came out and you saw Yoda fight Dooku, how pumped I was. Like, I remember I was beyond ecstatic. And, like, Yoda is such a badass. Like, he doesn't even grab his lightsaber. He uses the Force to pull it off his belt. It's so awesome! Sorry, I am the guy for the action scene.
You are. I will actually put my hands up and say that I really didn't like that battle at all. At all. Like, I thought it was a little bit ridiculous, even the first time around watching it. Because it was basically just like, like, Yoda was, like, a bouncy ball that had, like, been thrown full-on at a wall, and then you just watched it ricocheting around everywhere. And it was so hard to keep track of, and it made me dizzy and made me feel a bit sick, and it just, yeah, I don't know. I've just never been impressed with that one particularly.
Okay, all right. We'll need to do our favorite, in order, our favorite lightsaber battles at some point in time.
Okay.
One day.
That'll be interesting.
We'll see how close we are in comparison. Anyway, last bit of news. You have a contest coming up from StarWars.com, the Go Rogue and Tell Your Story. It's actually pretty cool. If you just go to StarWars.com/Go Rogue, you can actually go ahead and create a 2-minute Rogue One inspired video for a chance to win a trip to Lucasfilm in San Francisco and attend a screening of Rogue One, a Star Wars story, and see your video on the big screen. This is freaking awesome. You know, this is definitely, you know, this is something Disney and Lucasfilm have done well with, just because Star Wars has always been, you know, with the fans in mind from the 501st group to the fan films. You know, we had Noel on here before with his Star Wars fan film that was part of the, you know, the fan film awards. But this is a great contest, I think. I'm just beyond excited to be able to create a 2-minute Rogue One inspired video and get a chance to, you know, enter myself. What do you think, Danya?
I think that this is great if you are in... I think it says, it open to legal residents of the 50 US and DC, Canada excluding Quebec, Australia and New Zealand, who are 13 years of age and older at the time of entry.
What, you're submitting from my home address?
So yes, if you live in any of those places, it is a great opportunity for you, and I highly encourage people to actually enter this because I think it's really, really awesome. It's such a cool idea. I love the idea of this. But, yeah.
So, the contest actually begins September 30th. So, you have a month to prepare for it. And then it ends. So, you have to get your submission in by October 21st. So, it's a short production period or submission period, if you will. So, we have about a month to prep for it. And then about... 3 weeks to go ahead. Yeah, 3 weeks to go ahead and get everything submitted. And then between October 24th through November 11th, they'll be judging it. And they'll go ahead and announce the winners on the 14th of November. And then, of course,
yeah,
our winners will get confirmed on the in November. And then they'll be officially announced to everyone else in December, early December. And December, what is it, 12th, I think it said? You'll be watching... Rogue One before everyone else. Yeah,
yeah. December
12th. You'll be watching Rogue One before everyone else on Lucasfilm, you know, at Rancho Obi-Wan, and see your film on the big screen too. So that's pretty cool. Like, I love these fan things. I hope they release a bunch of them on the website and stuff like that.
That would be nice. I would like to be able to see what people manage to do, because a month for about a minute's worth of footage is feasible, depending on what you want to do. But yeah, it's also for someone who did like traditional animation. If someone was like, you've got a month to do like a minute to a minute and a half's worth of footage, and it has to be like coherent, I'd be like, ah, going crazy. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what people come up with. And what different kinds of videos will be done, and what they use to create them, and because Star Wars fans are amazingly creative. We've seen it through like all of the different fan films that they've done. So it'll be cool to see what people come up with.
I will say the film they made was really funny. I love it. The Go Rogue one that they made.
Yeah.
It was a little, you know, Robot Chicken-esque, if you will.
Yeah.
Just the stop motion style and everything, which is not bad, but that's kind of how I felt it was. But yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I do like that they included stormtroopers from like the, you know, 3.75 inch stormtrooper, you know, 3-inch stormtroopers to also the Lego stormtroopers. And they made the jokes like, aren't you a little short to be a stormtrooper when she's talking to the Lego one? So yeah, it was good. I liked it overall.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. I agree. This is why I'm so excited. To see what other people come up with.
I will say, if any of you are going to go ahead and compete, make sure you go to the Star Wars website, check it out, and make sure you check out the do's and don'ts. It is important that you make sure, because you don't want to get disqualified for something very simple. Like if you were to have like you and your friends actually go ahead and create something, no visible logos. That's one big thing. You can't have any logos of brands or clothes or sneakers in the background, just because it can be related to someone else's intellectual property. So just be mindful, read those do's and notes, and make sure you go ahead and submit your video. If you do listen to the show and you submit your own video, let us know. We would love to talk to you about it and maybe even feature it on our website, even if you don't win.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yes, please, if you are going to enter, come and talk to us about it. That would be excellent. I would love that.
Daniel will even do voiceovers for free.
for exposure.
I don't know. I just threw that out there for you right away. Put you on the spot. Yeah. All right. Let's move on to our spotlight topic. I'm really excited for the spotlight topic. Last week, we talked about Qui-Gon Jinn. This week, our spotlight topic is Mace Windu.
You refer to the prophecy of the one who will bring balance to the Force. You believe it's this boy?
Yay! Mace Windu!
Samuel L. Jackson.
Gotta love a bit of Samuel L.
Yeah, who doesn't, right? So I'm a big fan of Mace Windu, not only because he's got like the coolest purple lightsaber around, but just, you know, he is this character who kind of came out during the prequels, and I was kind of looking through some stuff just to make sure I knew Mace Windu like really well before we talk about it. There's no books or anything about Mace Windu that's part of canon. So I'm very specific that there are Mace Windu books out there that came out. They're now officially considered legends. And I double-checked to make sure that they didn't get included into canon or anything. But yeah, the Mace Windu books that are out there are all part of legends now. What do you think about that, Danya?
That's a really interesting choice. Specifically because Mace Windu himself is like an official character. Like, he's a canon character. He still exists in our canon. Whereas a lot of the legend stuff, like, you know, Jaina and Jason Solo and then Mara Jade and all of them, like, they're not, they don't exist in the Star Wars universe canon anymore. They do in legends. So it's really interesting that a canon character that was introduced as recently as Phantom Menace now no longer has any supporting material.
Well, Yoda doesn't really have a lot of supporting material either. Like, there are plenty of canon characters that don't now, because they've really truncated a lot of the additional material. But yeah, it's just interesting. You know, as we were making this document, I was going through it. You know, he's part of Phantom Menace, part of Attack of the Clones, part of the Clone Wars series fairly heavily. You know, you have to remember there are 6 seasons of that, so there's a good chunk there. And then obviously Revenge of the Sith, where he meets his end, or does he? So, you know, there's we'll get there. But yeah, it's just a kind of an interesting thing to think about, you know, Mace Windu. But he's definitely, you know, he's on the Jedi Order. He is, you know, a champion of the Jedi Order. And he really doesn't like any of the politics, you know, that happens with the Senate. So as we move on, let's talk about him in Phantom Menace. You know, he only had a few scenes in the Phantom Menace. One where he's interacting with Qui-Gon and Anakin, where he's interacting with young Anakin, testing him. And then he tells Qui-Gon that he doesn't think the Sith could return. We talked about this last week when we talked about Qui-Gon Jinn, but Mace Windu says, no, I don't think the Sith could return without us knowing it. You know, it almost feels, that almost sounds like a little arrogant to me. What do you think? Do you think he was?
Oh, yeah, it absolutely sounds arrogant. Like, it's very egotistical to be like, you know, that's a nice theory, but you're wrong because we say so, or because I say so. Like, come on, I'm like this master Jedi who's really in tune with the Force. If the Sith had returned, I'd know it. And it's overly confident as well in their ability. And I think a lot of that also leads to the fall of the Jedi, is that they are so complacent with, like, their world order that they can't really see outside of it. And not being open to anything outside of the order is also a part of why it fell, because they weren't willing to, like, look beyond themselves, or they tried to live too strictly within their rules. Like, they'd set up so many of them, they just weren't willing to move outside of it. So even here, it's kind of like, you know, Qui-Gon, we talked about him in depth last week.
Yeah,
you know, Qui-Gon is someone that clearly has a lot of skill and is very in tune with the Force as well, and is fairly trusted by the Jedi Council. So why on this very specific issue were they kind of like, nah, you're wrong? Like, why?
Yeah. It's, you know, I at the same time, it's one of those things where, without comparing it to other literature and stuff, it's like, you don't want to admit that something so horrific could be happening too. So I get like, no, this can't happen. Like, why would it, you know, happen? And it isn't until, you know, Qui-Gon is dead that they actually do it. Even like when they were interacting with, you know, Jake Lloyd, young Anakin Skywalker, where they're testing him on like, can you guess what these items are? You know, a ship, speeder, you know, those types of things. It's one of those things where obviously you see in the film that he is getting those things correct. But even then, you know, they said, so you'll teach him. He said, no, we won't. And, you know, and it's like they sense much fear in him and stuff, but like they just won't. They won't take a risk. They won't, you know, regardless of taking a risk, because they sense the fear in him and the anger. You know, Yoda says, you know, that's when he says, fear leads to anger leads to hate. But even if they sense that, wouldn't it be better to be the people to guide that and make sure it doesn't lead down that path?
Exactly.
And it feels it literally took, you know, Qui-Gon's death before they accepted it. And even then, they kind of did it begrudgingly. So
they were very hands off. And you would think if there was this potential prophecy, and also if they realized that there was the chance that things could go a different way, then why wouldn't they nurture someone like Anakin? Why would they not build on that relationship? Why wouldn't they get closer to him in order to make sure that that wasn't the case? Like, I don't... The Jedi Order in, like, the prequels made me want to flip a table every, like, 5 minutes out of frustration. Like, with all of them. I was, like, there going, none of you make any sense. You're all stupid. Who put you in charge of anything? No.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and honestly, I think... We talked about this, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, but Kevin Smith talked about, you know, did the interview with them, talked about how he had talked to Dave Filoni about the prequels and how it's really about the failure of the Jedi Order. And that's really what you see in Mace Windu and Yoda and all of them, because, you know, they don't act, they don't prevent what's happening before it's too late. You know, they get caught unawares. Obviously, you know, that's the whole point of this. You know, Palpatine was scheming and doing that, so it makes sense. But, you know, for an order that has survived for thousands of generations, think about it, generations, not years, that's generations. So that's at least, what, 30 years in between each generation? You know, more if you're kind of like Wookiee generations. So, like, that's awesome. But yeah, so definitely, you know, it's a failure of the Jedi Order. On from Phantom Menace, we go to Attack of the Clones, which, when I was looking at, other than the Clone Wars series, and I don't want to go too deep in the Clone Wars series, because we could spend all day talking about Clone Wars, like, we really could, because there's ridiculous amount of material, so I'll pull up a few specifics, but thinking of Clone Wars, or Attack of the Clones, not Clone Wars, Attack of the Clones, Mace Windu leads the Battle of Geonosis, and I will tell you, like, I don't know. One, I love Sam Jackson. Like, he's badass. Like, he's one fly guy. Like, I love him. I just love Sam Jackson. But I remember in theaters, and even now, I just rewatched it to kind of make sure I was caught up for the show, was him walking up. Like, you hear the music change, you see the Jedi coming around, and you see him walking up to Jango Fett and, you know, Count Dooku. And then he doesn't even, like, he threatens them just by putting his lightsaber out and just turning it on. It's just like, zoom, like right in front of all of them. And that's when, you know, he gets attacked by Jango Fett, but he leads that battle. And as soon as he does it, all the other Jedi ignite the lightsabers and it just happens. It was such an amazing scene for me, because before this time, we have never seen that many Jedi on that scale anywhere in the films. So I just thought it was amazing, him leading that battle of Geonosis. What'd you think, Danya?
Yeah, I liked it as well. And also, this really showed almost the military capability of the Jedi as well. Like, it wasn't anything that we'd seen really before with them. We usually get to watch the Jedi quite isolated, so one-on-one battles. And that's how we were introduced to them, even when, you know, we watched the original trilogy. So seeing something that's slightly, in a slightly larger scale, and seeing more of them, you know, fighting together and working together and being led into battle, it's a lot more interesting to see stuff like that, because when I thought of the Jedi before then, I hadn't really thought of them in large amounts fighting together. I'd always thought of them as, like, singular, going off on, like, smaller missions and that sort of thing. So, yeah. And, I mean, Mace Windu's a pretty competent leader as well when it comes to something like that. And I guess it just... You have to stop and wonder if he was more military-minded than he was anything else as well. Because he's very, very competent when it comes to physical action. But when it comes to the actual part of being on the Jedi Council, like, he does have a lot of arrogance, and he does make a lot of mistakes, and he does let himself, like, overlook a lot of stuff. So,
well, we'll talk more about that when we talk about the Clone Wars series, because there's a few Clone Wars episodes I'm going to pull out and just to talk about. But yeah, he definitely, he changes a little bit when he becomes a little bit more military, but he's very competent what he does. Whereas with the Council, you know, it's a sliding scale, I think. But I will say, like, obviously, you know, he's a skilled swordsman. You know, up until this point, we've been led to believe, you know, one, Jango Fett, just to talk about Jango Fett for a minute, Jango Fett is the father of Boba Fett, who, like, everybody loves Boba Fett, you know, and again, even Boba Fett didn't show up much in the original trilogy. You know, he gets hit by Han Solo on accident and falls into the Sarlacc pit, but, you know, he did capture Han Solo eventually. But, you know, Jango Fett is this amazing bounty hunter. We saw him earlier on in the film where, you know, him and, Obi-Wan fly through the asteroid field. They fought on Kamino, and he's pretty badass for this bounty hunter. We obviously learn he's Mandalorian and stuff like that through other means, but when it comes to fighting, you know, this Jedi Master named Mace Windu, he's fighting him, and Mace Windu really made it look almost like easy, and he literally cut off his whole head. Like, it was just like, you know, block, block, block. You're decapitated, bro. Like, it was ridiculous. I was like, like, I'll be honest, I did not expect it. As a kid, seeing, like, Jango, you know, you have to remember, Obi-Wan struggled with a fight with Jango Fett. Like, there was a whole fight scene that happened before, and it was a long fight scene. Like, they're going back and forth so much so, and, like, Boba had to help him out when they get on the, you know, Slave One and get away and everything. But Mace Windu made it look kind of like nothing. He's like, block, block, up, oh, you're decapitated.
Yeah, there's that. And then poor Boba Fett picks up his decapitated head still in the helmet. Like,
I know. Well, it's been cauterized by the lightsaber, you know, the purple lightsaber, so there's no blood dripping out or anything. But
I mean, like, that's still his disembodied head.
Like, well, it's not his dad. It's himself. It's the clone, you know, the older version of himself as a clone. Even though he was treated like a son. See, it's all sorts of messed up there.
I mean, it's still a head inside of a helmet that he picks up and is basically, like, touching his forehead to. And it's like, oh god, this is really messed up. Like, well, he's literally cradling a head in his hands.
Do you know if that head, you know, touching his head to another head, is that, like, some type of Mandalorian, like, you know, farewell ritual?
I don't actually know. I mean, I don't know that it would be. How often do Mandalorians have to say goodbye to someone's decapitated head?
I don't know. I just don't know. All right. We'll move on from Attack of the Clones there. But yeah, so like Mace Windu is pretty much a badass, you see. Now, moving on to the Clone Wars series. I don't want to go too into it because there are a bunch of episodes that Mace Windu is featured into. But I do want to bring up the first one, which was The Rescue of Rota, which was the Clone Wars movie, the one that kind of kicked off the series. And it became, I think it's like episode... Is it the first three episodes or do they release it chronologically later? But it's the story arc is The Rescue of Rota, which is we talked about previously on this show.
Yeah.
There's a quote. I'm trying to find it. There it is. So it's a quote between Mace Windu and Palpatine. Palpatine says, "This is an opportunity we've been looking for. The Jedi must rescue Jabba's son," in the sense of being able to get access to the hyperspace lanes through the Outer Rim and stuff like that. You know, because obviously the Hutt cartel controlled all that. So Palpatine is saying, "We need to do this. You know, the Jedi need to rescue, you know, Rota, Jabba's son." And then Mace Windu responds, "I don't like it. Dealing with that criminal scum, this is a dark day for the Republic." He holds certain ideals very high. You know, he realizes going into the route that they're taking, the Clone Wars, the Jedi becoming more militant, they're slipping into something that they shouldn't have to do. And we saw this even with, you know, in Phantom Menace with Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan telling, you know, Queen Amidala, "We can only protect you. We can't fight a war for you." Like, they're not... Even though they become generals, they really can't fight that war, but they slowly slip into that role. And they actually make deals with, you know, crime lords, you know, the Jabba the Hutt and the Hutt cartel. And you can see that Mace Windu had reservations about it even early on. But of course, with Palpatine being who he was, even though he was Chancellor at the time, he was able to sway Anakin and Obi-Wan. And, you know, Yoda sending Ahsoka to Anakin at the time to go ahead and rescue Stinky. So, what do you think about that episode specifically and kind of how Mace Windu reacted to it?
I mean, I really quite enjoy that episode just in general. It is an interesting look at that kind of push and pull between who are the Jedi. Like, going back to, like, who they should be is basically, like, just very in tune with the Force and supposed to be almost pacifist peacekeepers, kind of, to a point. But then you've got the pull where they're, like, very skilled fighters, so it almost becomes, like, a tug of war between their ideals and this... unbelievable power of, like, this military force that they have under them and how they use it. So it's really interesting to see how incredibly competent Mace Windu is as a general, as a leader in a military setting, and then less so when it comes to the diplomacy side of things and the peacekeeping side of things. And it's just really interesting, especially with him being as resistant as he is to move in that direction, because I think he's able to see that that's not the right way, but also that's where he's most competent, and it's just very, very interesting.
It's interesting that you say that, because you start to see... You know, how the Clone Wars series, like, I don't know if he changes that much between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, but I will tell you, having watched the entire Clone Wars series, you know, we talked about this, that when we think of Anakin Skywalker, both you and I both think of the Anakin Skywalker from the Clone Wars series.
Yeah.
Not Hayden Christensen, but the animated clone, you know, Anakin Skywalker. I feel like I actually still think of Samuel Jackson's Mace Windu, not the animated Mace Windu. But having watched the Clone Wars series, seeing what he did between Attack of the Clones, what happens in the Clone Wars series, and then how he acts in Revenge of the Sith, you know, we talked about the prequels being the fall of the Jedi Order, you know, the failure of the Jedi Order.
Mm-hmm.
You see that failure happening throughout the entire Clone Wars series if you hold the Jedi ideals to, you know, on a pedestal, if you will. And it makes sense the way Mace Windu reacts in Revenge of the Sith if you see what he did in the Clone Wars series. So a good example is, you know, at the very first episode, he's like, this is a dark day for the Republic. But it's not just a dark day for the Republic, for them starting to deal with Hutts. It was a dark day for the Jedi Order. It was kind of them, the first time they kind of, you know, turned their back on their values. And it was a slippery slope where they slowly started to slip down a direction where they became so engulfed with, you know, being generals and fighting a war between the Separatist Army and the Republic that they literally almost, they themselves helped destroy what they were trying to fight to protect. So, you know, you see it more in Revenge of the Sith, at least towards the end. Even in the beginning of Revenge of the Sith, before Anakin is put on the Jedi Council, you see that Mace Windu has been uncomfortable with the power that Palpatine has gained, and he talks to the Jedi Council about that. So much so that he even talks to them that they may need to help the transition the Senate to a new government. You know, that the Jedi Order has to be that beacon that it has been for thousands of generations to help transition it, even if they have to remove Palpatine forcefully from power to return those, you know, the special powers that they were voted to him during the time of war. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense.
And so, like, so he sees what they need to do, but there's the execution problem. And, you know, it's really interesting. The execution problem really all falls down on the fact that Palpatine, the Chancellor, who has all these extra powers, who's kind of turning the Republic into what we know as the Empire, turns out to be the Sith Lord they've been looking for this whole time. So what do you think about, you know, how do you think Mace Windu reacted, or what do you think went through Mace Windu's head when he realized this, you know, the Chancellor, who he really kind of doesn't trust in the first place, actually turns out to be the Sith Lord?
I mean, it's kind of one of those things where it was like, honestly, he should have gone with his gut a lot sooner, because a lot of the time with the Jedi, their gut feelings are very often going to be linked to the Force. And
so, can I ask you something about that?
Yeah.
So we talked about last week that Qui-Gon was all about the living Force, and he even told Obi-Wan, you know, be mindful of the living Force, the present, you know, versus just look to the future. Even though Obi-Wan told him to be mindful of the future, it's like, hey, you gotta be mindful of what's happening now. Trust your gut instinct. Do you think that maybe this is a failure of Yoda, or everyone just respecting Yoda so much, looking to the future and not looking at the current, the living Force, the present, yeah, and trusting themselves?
Absolutely. I absolutely think that a lot of the fall of the Jedi is down to the Jedi themselves. I mean, obviously a lot of it is down to Palpatine's manipulations, and also being able to use Anakin as almost the catalyst to just pushing it over to being completely destroyed. Like, but a lot of what led up to that is just the Jedi not being the Jedi anymore. Like, everything was there in front of them. You know, that kind of, all of the clues were laid out in front of them. It was just their unwillingness to look at it. And I really do think that, you know, Qui-Gon did give them the warnings, like, even before he died. And, you know, I would have thought that at one point that would have been enough of a wake-up call for them to start, I guess, putting more of Qui-Gon's ideas into practice. But instead, they're too complacent. Far too complacent. And it's too little too late at the point where Mace Windu is like, well, I had this feeling, but I never really acted on it. But I'm going to act on it now because the feeling is stronger. And it's far too late at that point, because he's let it kind of sit around for too long, let him, like, let Palpatine, like, gain too much. Yeah, just gain too much control, power. You know, he's been able to manipulate everything into his favor, so at that point, it's far too late to be able to do anything about it. So, yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's far too late, because I'll tell you this. So when we find out that Palpatine is a Sith Lord, we find, you know, Mace Windu finds this out from Anakin Skywalker. So Anakin Skywalker does the right thing. Once he finds out that Palpatine is a Sith Lord, he goes straight to Mace Windu, the leader of the Jedi Council, and says, "Hey, the Sith Lord we've been looking for is Chancellor Palpatine. You know, it's Shreve Palpatine. This is who it is." And, you know, it's really interesting that Mace Windu doesn't really trust him, Anakin, completely. And he tells him to stay here. He's like, if this is true, you know, we need to take care of this. And so he takes, you know, a dispatch of Jedi with him to go arrest the Chancellor, which is the right thing they should do, because that's what, you know, the Jedi should do and what the Republic should stand for. You should arrest who's, you know, if they are this bad person, right? Well, they obviously go, and Palpatine pulls out his lightsaber, and they fight. And he literally dispatches the other Jedi that came with Mace Windu. But Mace Windu does eventually beat Palpatine. You know, Palpatine. Oh my gosh. in all honesty, I have it in my notes as Palpy here, so, you know.
Yeah.
But maybe that's why. But in the end, you know, Mace Windu has beaten Palpatine. Palpatine. Oh my gosh, now I'm going to say it nonstop. He's beating Palpatine, and Anakin shows up at just like the absolute worst moment. But at the right, in reality though, he probably didn't. He showed up at the worst moment for Mace, but probably the right moment for the Jedi Council. You know, he tells Mace Windu he shouldn't kill him. You know, that's wrong. That's not what the Jedi Order does. But the minute that Mace Windu says he's too dangerous to stay alive and he wants to strike down Palpatine, that is the failure of the Jedi Order. That's the, you know, the leader of the Jedi Order, if you will. You know, one of the leaders of the Jedi Order completely failing at that moment. And it's that moment where he's about to strike him down that Anakin makes a decision not to let him kill his friend. You know, because he doesn't, you know, Anakin is still being manipulated. But if he had been, you know, if they had simply arrested Palpatine, not saying he, you know, he wouldn't have, you know, gotten away or something like that, but I don't think Anakin would have fallen completely. He may have been able to come back from it. But at that moment, he made a snap decision to try to strike down Palpatine. Anakin intervened, and that's when Anakin and Mace Windu fought, and Mace went flying through a window.
Yeah.
So it was that failure right there that just totally cemented Anakin to the dark side. And the failure of the Jedi Order. It was right then when he wanted to take revenge, which was not something that the Jedi should have done.
No, because you see him getting disenfranchised with the Jedi Order all through, like, the Clone Wars series. You see it
at the end of Attack of the Clones, too. When he's fallen in love, or when he's confessing his love, and Padme admits that she loves him back, too. Like, you see that's no, you know he's not supposed to do that. But he just has to. You know, he follows his heart.
Yeah, but it's just, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, he's looking at it and basically being like, these are the ideals by which the Jedi should live, and this is the Jedi code. There are some parts of it that can be, or should be, kind of bent, but not broken completely. But, you know, the killing someone, striking someone down because they're too dangerous, too powerful, without going through, like, due process, like, that's putting into the hands of the Jedi the role of judge, jury, and executioner, and that's not okay for any law-keeping force at all. Full stop. The end. Like, so, if they've got to the point where they've been able to incapacitate someone and take them into custody, then they absolutely should be doing that. So, I don't disagree that this is basically the tipping point. This is the last thing that just tips Anakin right over. There's a lot that's built up to that point, but if Mace Windu had just abided by the Jedi code, this code that up until that point, he's been so stringent about and so kind of like, this is the code, this is how we work, this is how the Jedi are, we're going to be very strict about this. If he just stuck to it, then probably it wouldn't have got as far as it had.
Yeah, I'll agree with you completely. So, just to kind of go through it, you know, here's the thing is, I'll agree with Anakin said something in Attack of the Clones. You know, he said, attachment's forbidden for the Jedi. Possession is forbidden. Compassion, which I would define as unconditional love, is essential to the Jedi's life. So you might say that we are encouraged to love. You know, that's a twisting of, you know, not really twisting, but a bending of the rules, if you will.
Yeah.
So, like, the fact that Anakin has this view and he's thought of what the Jedi did, and he sees Mace Windu attacking Palpatine, becoming that, you know, judge, jury, executioner all in one, it just destroys, like, any hope that Obi-Wan, who probably would have understood, you know, at that time, you know, it submits the idea that Obi-Wan can never help him. It submits the idea that they, one, are going to reject him for his failures with, you know, Padme. And it's not a failure, but it's something that he is hiding still. And so that's when he lashes out, and we see Mace Windu fall. So, this leads us to the last question. Do you think Mace Windu survived the fall? You know, we heard about the news where Sam Jackson, you know, said he talked to George Lucas and said Mace Windu was still alive. So what do you think, Danya? Do you think Mace Windu is alive still?
No, I don't. I think that he's died. Like, honestly, that's what I think.
All right, so here's the thing. I was hoping that he was alive. I was hoping that he would be alive. Just because we've seen, you know, Darth Maul, you know, got cut in half, fell down a big hole, still alive. Darth Maul, you know, run away from Palpatine, you know, still alive. So, you know, I was hoping that Mace Windu would come back. But today on Twitter, I decided to reach out to Pablo Hidalgo to see what he said. So I asked him if he thought Mace Windu survived the fall from the Chancellor's office. And Pablo Hidalgo said it's simple, I do not. So I then tried to ask, you know, Sam Jackson if he had any thoughts, and Sam didn't respond. But from Pablo Hidalgo himself, apparently Mace Windu did not survive.
And I, at this point, I would be more willing to take his word over anyone else's. So.
Yeah. As much as I love George Lucas, because Pablo Hidalgo is part of the Lucasfilm story group, he's going to be the one who's going to know the most, have the most insight on what is the new current canon. But I, you know, I'm going to still say this. I like my headcanon that Mace Windu may have survived. You know, and I'll also say, Pablo Hidalgo, someone said, I do not. When I asked, do you think he survived? I didn't say, did he survive? I left it open intentionally. You know, so from a certain point of view, Mace Windu can still be alive. But I do also want to read one more tweet that we got today as we were discussing this. Evan from DjangoCast. Django? JodoCast. See, all these Mandalorians. Evan from JodoCast said, hashtag, what is it? I didn't copyright.
Mace's Snoke, wasn't it?
Yeah, hashtag Mace's Snoke, and I had to tell him your Snoke theory sucks because sucks. Oh my gosh, I'm gonna cut this.
Your Mace theory sucks.
All right, you know what? Stop. Just make fun of me. Your Snoke theory sucks. There's too many T's in that theory. Well, I guess it's only theory, not your. Anyway, Evan from JodoCast said that Mace is Snoke, and I had to tell him that I don't think that Mace is Snoke. Your Snoke theory sucks. There we go. I'll edit that out, Danya.
Please don't. It was hilarious. No.
I want to leave all this in just so you guys can hear how bad I am at speaking. Anyway, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast or on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Resistance Radio Podcast. As always, I am Mikey B.
And I'm Danya.
And may the Force be with you guys. You have a great week.
Bye.